Organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the church of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org to learn more about the organization itself, the members, the components, and everything that PAX Inc. brings to the table. And definitely make sure you click on that tab that says the code so you can learn more about the 12 codes of conduct that PAX Inc. has created for Black America. Also, while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. We have some exciting news. New shows are coming on the horizon. Of course, you already know, every Monday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can catch Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones directly on the Freedom Train website. Make sure you click on the tab that says Office Hours. That way you can catch the live show. Also, Tea Time Black Women Talk is a show directly designed for black women, and it will be coming very soon. We have four very intelligent, different types of black women who will come together to talk about the issues their way and kind of put their flavor on it. So make sure you stay tuned for that. And also, Lessons from the Screen is a show that will be breaking down films and documentaries and all different other things and seeing how they pertain to the black community. So make sure you look out for Lessons from the Screen, and that will be hosted by Mr. Patrick Irvin, so that will be coming soon. Just giving you a little flavor of the expansion of the Freedom Train Network. Our social medias, make sure you follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Twitter at Freedom Train Net, Instagram at Freedom Train Network. Like our Freedom Train Facebook page, subscribe to the Freedom Train on YouTube, and make sure you subscribe to the Freedom Train on iTunes and or Google Play. That way you can get episodes coming directly to your phone. Pat, I did a lot of talking, but how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. You know, you don't have to excuse yourself. We all go through puberty at some point or another, and our voices begin to change.
It's well, you know,
a part of growing up.
You know, sometimes, you know. feeling better though, man.
I'm a little bit better. You know what I'm saying? We're gonna push through. I'm not where I wanna be, but I'm headed in the right direction.
There you go. You wanna kinda tease them a bit about Lessons from the Screen while we got a few moments.
Oh yeah, Lessons for the Screen. So it's gonna be a show where we're breaking down digital documents and movies, television shows, whatever. We'll give you a brief summary. You know, we're not going to give you the full on of what's going on in the movie because we want you to go check it out. But we'll give you enough, and then we're going to break down a couple lessons that you can get that we can utilize as a community to really begin to make changes. I really can't give them a teaser because I ain't got one loaded up right now, but I will tell you we got custom music from the hottest new artists on the planet. He did our intro song, and it's gonna be hot. I just want to put this out there. Look, most of the Freedom Train shows are funny and all of that other stuff. It's not that, because I'm not funny. So I just want to put that out there. Don't be expecting what you get when you hear The Fix, because I'm not Joe. I'm not crazy like Joe is.
And right. You tell him.
He's got a show coming out where that show is just as equally bonkers as The Fix. I'm not crazy like Jamie either. So don't be expecting a continuation.
Right.
Of that.
You tell them. You got to work at being crazy like this. So there you go. So we ain't gonna keep people waiting too much longer. So today I'm excited about this interview because we get to learn more about traumatic brain injuries, the advocacy for it, and we get to learn about it from the standpoint of a caregiver. But we also get to go deeper into the world of traumatic brain injuries. So Minister Twyla Reed is also a visionary and a co-author of the newly released anthology entitled Affirmations and Antidotes That Heal Me, which is a collaboration of healing words by authors, poets, and lyricists. Now, she's also the author of a book entitled Broken Wings, which helps others to understand the life of a brain injury survivor and the caregiver. So, by sharing her personal story of hope and healing through her son's traumatic brain injury, she promises to reassure, uplift, and enthuse others affected by the devastation traumatic brain injury causes by letting them know that they too can go from tragedy to triumph. And I can already tell you by now, just by the conversations we've had, this is going to be a good one. She brings a good spirit, good passion. So I would like to welcome to the Freedom Train, Minister Twyla Reed. Our studio audience, go ahead and give a round of applause to Minister Twyla Reed. How you doing today, Minister Reed?
I am okay. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing good. Yes, ma'am. Thank you for being here once again.
Thank you so much for having me as a guest. I am truly honored to be on your show.
No problem. Thank you. So, like always, Patrick has the first question. Go ahead, Patrick. Do your thing.
So, as always, Joe gives us good intros, and then I always want to know more. So I always, want to ask the very first thing has to always be, can you give us a little bit more? Can you give us a little bit more into your background about the different things that you've done, the different hats that you wear? Just give us some more.
Sure. Okay, I was born in Columbus, Mississippi, so I'm a Southern girl. My parents are Arthur and Vera Flanoy. I am the oldest of three children, and I currently reside in Savannah, Georgia, where my family and I, we've been here now for 4 years. I'm a wife, a mother of four, two biological, and I have two stepchildren. I'm a grandmother of five, and also a mom to a very, very spoiled pit bull. I'm also a 20-year retiree Army veteran. When you talk about the hats that I wear, wow, there are so many. As I just stated, a wife and a mom and a grandmother, but I'm also a caregiver, and I'm a caregiver to my now adult son. He'll be 29 this month, and he sustained a severe traumatic brain injury when he was 11 years old. I am a licensed minister. I'm a published author. I am the founder and the CEO of Broken Wings Incorporated. I'm the founder of Broken Wings Brain Injury Empowerment Group. I'm the founder of an online photo gallery called When Heaven Speaks. There's a couple of other things that I do, but last but not least, I am a diehard brain injury advocate. I tell you, I live it, eat it, and I breathe it. That's why I'm passionate about what I do because of the journey that we've gone on through my son's recovery.
Okay. And
that's a lot.
Yeah. That's like, how do you find the time in the day to just find time for yourself? How do you find time for yourself to be able to escape and recharge and recoup to be able to go back to all of this that you do?
Well, when you're talking about recharging and things like that, first of all, we all know the first rule on an aircraft, right, when it comes to the oxygen mask. What do they tell you? They tell you to put your mask on first, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So when it comes to being a caregiver, it's important that you take care of yourself. Because if you don't, you're not going to be able to effectively take care of anybody else. And so although that's the first rule of caregiving, it really is the most often forgotten. But
yeah,
I just try my best to just remember to take a moment, because I have times when I just want to cry and scream and all those good things too. So I do get those moments to myself. Sometimes I have to just make myself do them, and sometimes my husband has to force me to do them. So sometimes I go to the gym, or sometimes I just go for a walk, or sometimes when everyone's in the bed, I just kind of take that time by myself to kind of read and meditate and spend time with God, and just kind of have a little bit of me time, you know. I try to do those things, and it's not easy. I promise you, it's not. So sometimes you just have to force that. I jokingly say a lot of times I'm going to write a book, and it's going to be called When the Caregiver Needs Caregiving. So be
right.
on the lookout for that.
Okay. But that's a important message to give. Like you say, that people often ignore, because their thing is, well, I have to care for people. I have to care for people. I forget myself. I'm a giving person. I like to give myself to my community and others. And I sometimes forget to take care of myself. So I'm listening to you say that, because you're talking to me too.
Yeah, we have to do it. It's because when you are a caregiver and you do that, everybody can't be a caregiver. Honestly,
right.
They really cannot. And it's something, it doesn't come with a manual. It's something that's built in. God gives us that. He gives us the tools. He gives us the know-how and the knowledge and the wisdom to know how to become a caregiver. And so, like I said, it's easy to get caught up with caring for everybody else, because it becomes second nature. So you just got to remember to take care of yourself.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So you are the founder, president, and CEO of Broken Wings Incorporated. So could you please tell us what Broken Wings is, why you started the organization, and kind of like the mission and the mission of the organization, you know, kind of why are you here and what's Broken Wings all about?
Okay, yes, okay. Broken Wings Incorporated, it's a newly established, it's a faith-based nonprofit organization, and it's designed to provide awareness about traumatic brain injury to different communities while providing support. We provide resources, tips, and brain injury prevention insight. And what we basically do is we just basically educate and empower brain injury survivors and their caregivers and their family members by teaching them. That's what we do. We teach them how to turn their tragedies around with working strategies to ideal well-being to get results in spite of those challenges that they're going to face, in spite of the health or wealth challenges. And why I started this, well, I started this organization because of the helplessness and the hopelessness that I endured when my son sustained his brain injury. This is a long journey we've been on, and his recovery is truly a process, and it's a process that really just began instantaneously, like just at the snap of your fingers. That's how quick it was when we had our car accident. But it's one that will have lasting lifetime effects. And so those challenges that I went through, wow, I tell you, I was on the verge of a nervous breakdown. The stress was so intense. It was just hard to get up and just go through those things daily. Watching him in pain emotionally and watching him suffer socially, I got to a point where my heart just couldn't take that anymore. See, because when you're going through brain injury recovery, the doctors are only concerned about the physical aspect of what, you know, of your recovery. They don't necessarily deal with the emotional piece and the socialization piece. And that is something that's really needed in the brain injury community. When someone suffers a brain injury, the whole family is affected. It reaches out and it just touches everyone that's connected to that person. It's a different kind of monster, and people don't understand about brain injury. And so that's how it came about. And our mission is basically we offer survivors of brain injury and their families the hope of continued recovery through the provision of providing location and contact information for outpatient counseling, for education, and for connections to community resources. That's what we do. There are many brain injury survivors who aren't privy to the information that's available out there to them. And so we help them with that. It can be, I basically just link them to the services in the area that they reside. You know, they may not know how to use the Internet. The brain injury may be that severe. They may not have the support system. You know, my son, he's blessed. He's lucky to have us, you know, to have that support system like that. We are blessed to have people support us and back us up as the caregivers because so yes. many brain injury survivors do not have that.
Yes, ma'am.
So can you give, because you talked a lot just then about providing the resources and making people aware of the different things that they have available to them as well as the different challenges. Can you give somebody that may not have any idea or experience with brain injury what it's like to be a caregiver for a brain injury survivor or even what it might be from your perspective, what it might be like for the person that's even going through this experience?
Yes. Like I stated, brain injury, the effects of it does not just touch the survivor, okay? It honestly, it reaches out and touches everyone that is connected to that person who sustains that injury. And the stress that comes along with being a caregiver, it's one that can get away from you if you are not careful. So that's what we talked about, the importance of self-care. And caring for my son, this is what it's taught me. It's taught me how to truly be a survivor. See, he's shown me what a hero truly is when he gets up every morning and he tries it again no matter how many times he fails. He's living proof that God is real. He's living proof that God still performs miracles. See, he died in my arms during the car accident, and they revived him. And so doctors told us he would never walk again. They told me he'd never talk again. And guess what? He's walking and he's talking. Yeah, we deal with the cognitive effects now. He has a portion of his brain removed. So for him to be able to do those things, that's proof to me. So for me to see that every day, that gives me courage. That gives me the inspiration and the motivation to get up and do the things that I do. Like I said, it's extremely stressful. And oftentimes the physical and the mental and the emotional draining of being a caregiver, it's hard. So I guess because there's so many unanswered questions, what you seem as abnormal has become our normal. And so my advice to those would just be, or my message to those who sustain a brain injury or care for someone, is to just ensure that you educate yourself. That's just so important because you got to put things in place to help manage the stressors that's going to come. You have to make sure that you know, because there are so many doctors out there, believe it or not, that just don't know about brain injury. They really don't. I would just, advise them to exercise, use routines, use daily schedules, daily reminders. We have sticky notes everywhere to help, you know, remind my son of things. We use alarms. I use a journal. You kind of got to use whatever works for you. Being flexible, that's a key factor. So I would just say education. You got to educate yourself. I didn't know about brain injury before my son had his brain injury, before we were in a car wreck. I had no clue. But I have boxes and boxes and boxes of information and literature that I've researched on that I can teach about brain injury. You know why? Because if I didn't do it, who would do it for me? Who would teach me about it? They don't only tell you what you want, only tell you so much, what they think you want to know, to just kind of get you by. So education, that's the key thing.
So if you don't mind me asking, when your son suffered his brain injury, did they kind of just give you baseline information and expects you to just say, okay, well, this is how life is going to be, and kind of set the expectations for his life low, if that makes sense?
Yes, it makes sense. That's exactly what they told me. First of all, like I said, they told me he'd never walk or talk again. Then I was told, because he was in a coma for a while, then I was told, well, if he comes out of the coma, he'll be in a vegetative state for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when we went through the inpatient care and it was time for him to be discharged, they wanted to transfer him to a facility where they were going to only provide him one day a week for 1 hour of outpatient rehabilitation. Well, that wasn't enough for me. So
right.
I researched different hospitals throughout the United States. I found a really good children's hospital in Birmingham, Alabama. I transported him by myself to Birmingham, Alabama from Fayetteville, North Carolina, in the backseat of my Bonneville at the time to the hospital. I was told, because I was military at the time, that TRICARE is not going to pay for it. I was like, it's okay, I pay for it myself. So, yes, they did not tell me. When I left the hospital, if I had just taken what they told me, I don't know where we would be in his recovery.
Right. And see, that's kind of like what I was asking that to kind of get to, because and I know nothing about brain injuries, but what I've seen about health and mental health and your mental state and your overall health and like the ideas and, you know, power of the mind and everything, that accepting someone's low expectations of you will give you low expectations. But just because you limit me doesn't mean that this is my existence. You don't determine my existence. My existence is determined by what I set in my life and what I choose to work toward and don't choose to work toward. So that's what I'm hearing out of this is, you guys said, you know what, we're going to set our own expectations for this. We're going to live the life that we want to live, and you're not going to stop us. I know he had this setback, but it's not going to stop us from living life.
That's right, exactly. And like I said, if we had not have gotten the education that we needed, then guess what? I would be relaying those same messages to him that, you know, that they relayed to me. Well, Marlon, you know, you really can't do this and you really can't do that. You know, my thing was, I didn't want to make him an invalid if he didn't have to be one.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, those limitations are there. There are limitations that are there, yeah. But guess what? There are some things that he can do. And there are some things that he does that are not brain injury stuff as well. So, you know, I know the difference. So, yes, you can't just can't accept that. That's why it's so important to just get the education that you need. Do what you need to do. It's going to take is it easy? No, absolutely not. Is it going to take some hard work and some dedication and commitment? Absolutely. But it's worth it.
I'm curious. I don't know if you follow the football thing with the brain injuries and the CTE and all of that. But I did. If you did follow it, I was curious on what your perspective of that entire situation would be. And if you don't follow it, then you can just say, Patrick, I don't know what you're talking about. Shut up.
Well, actually, okay, let me tell you. I watched the movie. I don't know if I can say it on the air, but I watched the movie, right? We know the movie, right? Okay.
Yes.
And so I tell you, I cried. I shed tears because of the truth behind it. Because that organization is a billion-dollar organization, it was heartbreaking to see that they care more about the money than these players' lives. Do you realize that 5.3 million Americans are affected by some type of debilitating disability caused by a brain injury every single year? That is a lot. So when you talk about these players and CTE and how they're killing themselves and they're doing all of this, it's heartbreaking. It's a tragedy. It really is that people, that Americans are, you know, are those that are, who possess the powers over, you know, these organizations can care so little about a person's health. You know, I watch the sport with my husband, and I cringe when I see these players take these hits. Because, see, I know what's happening to them on the field because I see it. I'm watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And to see them laying there and knowing that they're getting up, they probably don't even know where they are. But the fans don't know that, or people that are watching it, they don't know that. But when you're educated about brain injury and you know about it, or when they take those hits like that and I see them laying on the field like that and they have to get assistance to get up and walk to the side of the field, and I guarantee you, I'm thinking to myself, wow, they probably don't even know their name right now. They probably don't even know where they are right now. It's hard. It's
right.
It's heartbreaking. It is.
That's like I said, that's interesting. That's a good question too, Pat. That's a great question. It's interesting to get a take on that because it's a mentality that goes with that. I'm a former athlete, football player. I fully understand why those players go out and do that and are not afraid to take those hits. And even like when I played, in my instance, I wanted to give those hits. Those were some of the most exciting times that I've experienced in the sport. But it was also some of the scariest times because I can remember, getting hit in the head and then everything going black and you waking up and, like you're saying, you're trying to figure out where you are. And those hits, they compound, especially the way certain people play. And now we're seeing that a lot of the players that we enjoy watching, they have all of these cognitive issues. So, within our community, like you're saying, we really need to take a look at that and stop just funneling our young men into football and things like that. So,
and it is not just on the professional side, in high school and in college as well. But see, when you get to the level where it's on the professional side, when the fame and the fortune and the money, all that come into play, what are you willing to do? I mean, how much of yourself are you willing to give up? How much of your soul are you willing to sell for the money and the fame? What about the effect that it's going to have on your family members who have to deal with this and deal with this invisible disability? See, you can see a broken arm because there's a cast, right? And you can see a broken leg, but you can't see the brain when it's broken. You can't. And so that's why it's called the invisible disability. I get all the time, people tell me all the time, oh, wow, your son, he doesn't look like he has a brain injury. That's one thing you don't say. That's another book, that things you don't say to a person with a brain injury.
Right.
Because there are certain things you just don't say. But because they don't look like they have a brain injury, you never know. You never know those players who taking those hits get up and walk off the field. Like you just said, you get up and you're in a daze. You don't even know where you are. See, the people in the stands, oh, they're cheering, yeah, 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 because they got up. They didn't get up. They got helped up. And when they get over there, I'm telling you, those effects are going to be for a lifetime. Brain injury doesn't go away. Does not go away. And there are no two brain injuries that are alike in the world ever, anywhere.
So those
effects are a lifetime. A lifetime.
Yes, ma'am.
You hear it, Joe?
Yep. I'm listening, but but it's scary that's the code. Like, we know this information. It's not like we don't know this information. We know this information, but our young men are continuing to be funneled into these sports that put their health in jeopardy, all because they're expected to save the family.
I agree with the last part about funneling our kids in to expecting them to save the family, but I don't think we know how prevalent brain damage is in contact sports. Like, I think it's something that we, as a community, I think we're kind of oblivious to. Like, we know when you take the big hit and you slow to get up, we know that, but I don't think there are a lot of us that know, like she said, about the fact that the damage compounds. It doesn't necessarily just go away after a couple of days. It's not just necessarily just the big hit. It could be the small hits that just make you feel a little dazy or a little dazed or woozy. And then, you know, but you don't really, because you regain your composure fairly quickly, and you just move on to the next play without thinking, you know. And then, you know, you think about playground football. We all play playground football, where no pads, playing in the middle of the street, tackling each other on the concrete and the asphalt. You know what I'm saying? Just laying each other out, head-to-head, collisions all the time. Like, I played backyard football every day during the summer for, like, 4 or 5 years straight. Like, tackle, full on. We were trying to rip each other's heads off.
Yeah.
And then, too, you know, think about it. When the younger you are, the effects may not show up until years later.
That's true.
Years later.
That's one of the things I'm thinking about.
Yes, yes. Years later. And then you start to wonder, man, why am I doing this? Why am I forgetting this? Or why am I having these seizures all of a sudden? Or why can't I remember what I had for breakfast this morning? Oh, I know I set my keys right there, so where are they now? You know, and I'm not just talking about, you know, because we all forget things from time to time. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when you take these hits and people be like, oh, it's just a little hit, it's just a concussion. It's not just a concussion. It's life-changing, lifetime damage that's being done to the brain. Because when you think about the brain is just a small piece of muscle, and it sits in this sack of water, okay? And the sack of water that the brain sits in, it's so thin. So think about it. When you're in a car wreck, you know whiplash, right? When you someone slams into you from behind, what do? You go forward, and then you go back again, right? Well, guess what? When you move forward like that, that brain moves in that sack of water, and the skull, the inside of the skull contains really tiny sharp ridges. So when that clear thin sack that your brain is housed in, when it slams into the front part of your skull, and then when you move back in that car seat, and then that brain slams into the back part of your skull, guess what's happening? Those tiny ridges are tearing that sac that contains your brain. And so those tears in that covering, it exposes the brain. And that's how the damage takes place.
Wow.
So something as simple as that, being in a car because somebody slamming you, you're moving your head back and forth. But if you don't think about it like that.
Right. Yeah, that's wow. So let me ask you this, because and this is more so on the advocacy side. You created the Broken Wings Brain Injury Empowerment Group. Now, you've given us the background about why you've become an advocate, your son's story, and you're giving us more information about brain injuries and different ways they affect us and different ways people can even receive brain injuries. So for this empowerment group, this Broken Wings Brain Injury Empowerment Group, what are the components of the group? When someone attends a group function, what are the things they could expect? And one of the most important is, how could people contact you or the organization to become part of the group?
Okay, right now, Broken Wings Brain Injury Empowerment Group was created in March of this year. Right now, it's an online empowerment group, okay? And it consists of survivors, caregivers, we have brain injury advocates, and we have healthcare professionals who work with brain injury patients or clients in some aspect or another. Now, it's worldwide, it's global, okay? So we have members from all over the world, the U.K., we have members from Germany, Korea, Austria, Australia, Canada, United States, everywhere. And so when you join our group, we're not only provide encouragement and inspiration, we provide education and empowerment to those who join. And see, that's the difference. We provide the information. We help them understand that the treatment options when they're available from a personal perspective. I share resources. I share treatment research and breakthroughs that doctors don't tell you about, okay? And most importantly, we provide the emotional and the social support from others going through the same thing or similar things. I know for me, one of the best days. I couldn't wait to get to the support group. See, I'm hoping by January we're going to actually have a physical place to where we can do brain injury support groups, like a physical setting. But right now, what I do is on Tuesdays in the group, I actually do a Facebook Live session every single Tuesday unless something happens, where I go in and I do an education session. And I talk about all kinds of things, you know, topics like things you don't say to a brain injury survivor or myths and facts about traumatic brain injury. I did a session once about a healthy gut equals a healthy brain. You know, things like that that the brain injury survivor, doctors not, that they don't talk about. And see, there's a difference in a support group and an empowerment group. See, I look at it like support means you give an assistance and you holding up, right? You think about something supporting something. Well, when you're empowering somebody, you're teaching them how to take the authority needed themselves to do something. That's what we do. We give them the tools that they need to take control of their lives at whatever level that they can. So that's the difference, and that's what we do.
Okay. Well, go ahead, Pat, because I don't want to ask all the questions.
Well, I'm hoping we can have I think our first major function, we're going to be having a first annual brain injury awareness walk in March of 2018, because March is Brain Injury Awareness Month, so we're going to kick off the month with a walk.
Okay. Well, let me ask this. Pat, give me, go ahead. So let me ask this. What are some of the key components? What are some of the best takeaways that people can get from your support group or going to any support group for people with brain injuries? What are some of the things that they can learn that will help make the situation better or help them get better with the situation?
Okay, this is the main thing they take away. They take how to turn their tragedies into strategies to get results in life in spite of the challenges that they're going to face, because they're going to face health challenges, they're going to face wealth challenges, they're going to face all types of challenges. They're also, they take away the tools. I give them the tools that they need to really just get through each day. We do affirmations every day. We do affirmations at night. And so I just give them what they need to be the best survivor that they can be. I get a lot of feedback, and they inbox me, and they tell me things like, you know, the group is a family for me. So I guess that could be one of the things I say that they take away. They walk away feeling a sense of being loved and knowing that they're not alone on this journey, and that even though their physical family right there with them may not be there for them and may not be the support that they need, that they can get the support that they need from their Broken Wings family.
Okay. Okay. Excuse me. So, the reason why I asked that, because I just wanted people to get a better understanding of what support groups can bring. Because I think a lot of times people, they don't want to go to support groups because they automatically lump all types of groups into the category, the idea of this means that something really, really, really horrible is wrong with me and I can't be fixed, or people are, or the treatment or the healing is stigmatized due to lack of information, and I want to make sure that people can get a good idea of what's being brought to the table in the support groups.
Well, a lot of times, like I said, they're not privy to the information, so I provide, there are questions that they have to answer before they can join the group, okay? And I always need to know what area they live in. So when a person joins the group, I automatically do the research, and I locate the local Brain Injury Alliance organization for their area. And I break down the different areas within that organization. So when they're on a support group and they're expressing their need at the time or whatever they're going through, then I can provide them with a phone number, a contact person, and say, hey, this is the person I need you to contact, and they can help you get the services you need. You know, I know there was one lady who's going through a really bad divorce, and so it just was so overwhelming for her, and that happens a lot, you know, especially with, you know, with married couple, a spouse may just can't deal with the stress and they leave. And so the brain injured survivor, who happens to be the spouse that got left, I mean, it's overwhelming. They don't know what to do. And so I just link them up with the services that they need, with the resources that they need, with the legal help that they need. And sometimes that's enough, you know, because they just don't know where to go. They don't know where to turn. I had a young man who was a veteran, and mm-hmm. he's paralyzed. He has a brain injury, and his family just treat him really bad. And about 3 o'clock one morning, he messaged me and told me he was contemplating suicide. And I tell you, I was typing as fast as my fingers could move to, you know, just encourage him. And I stayed on with him for almost 3 hours, just letting
right.
him know that
right.
he mattered, that his life was important, that he was important. And he's doing well today. So
well, that's,
you know,
great.
Those are the things that we offer. We are a family. We're not just a support group. So that's why I say a lot of times, like you said, those traditional, you know, support groups, that people just put a support group up just for you to join and go in there and talk about and vent. But we do so much more than that. We actually educate and provide the resources that they're looking for, that they need. So that's why I'm really hoping, you know, we can expand this. I'm believing God for that, that we're going to actually have a physical location by the beginning of next year. Like I said, right now it's online, and we have over 800 members. We have almost 900 members, and we just launched in March.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And I'm glad you gave that information, because people need to know. People really need to know. There are a lot of people who can get lost and glossed over and forgotten about, who have these issues, and then we just don't need any more people like that. So, okay.
Right, they get mishandled a lot because they're misunderstood. They are. My son, he's misunderstood a lot. So, you know, we're constantly advocating for him on the job or wherever it might be, in social settings, because you can't see the brain injury. And so a lot of times their deficits come across as maybe harassment any kind of way that you can imagine other than what it really is, which is an effect from the traumatic brain injury.
Right. Yes, ma'am.
So you are, not to change the subject too much, but you are also a finalist for an award, the 2017 Indie Author Legacy Award of the Year.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah. Let us know about that, how that felt, what's going on with that.
Okay, well, actually, I was surprised when I was notified that I was a finalist for that award, because I actually did the traditional publishing. I did. But when I contacted them, they were so impressed by the content of Broken Wings, of our book, that they wanted to recognize that. And so they did. And so we went to Baltimore, and it was a really great experience for me to be a part of. It was really elegant. And just to be in the room with a lot of different people, I got to meet the awesome Miss Sylvia Traymore. You guys know who she is. She's the first black writer for Saturday Night Live. And
okay.
I got to take a picture with her, and it was just really awesome, just the whole experience. It was good. It was a very humbling experience for me. I was very pleased with that. I was notified, I guess, last week, because I went to Houston last week for the National Black Book Festival, and while I was there, I was notified that I was also nominated for Elevate 2017, Empowering, Celebrating, Triumph Woman, Women. So that was something else that was exciting for me. So God is opening a lot of doors, and I tell you, it's moving really fast, faster than I thought it was going to be. We're being recognized for in the month of December, and January for 10 black female experts to follow in 2018 with the Huffington Post. Yes, so I'm excited about that too.
Congratulations for that. Yes, that's what's up.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. So, but and like you say, you got that award for your book Broken Wings, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Could you go a little? Because you have the Broken Wings organization as well as the book. So, I know we've talked a lot about the brain injuries and things, but can you give us a little information about the book as well, and what readers could expect when they actually purchase the book?
Yes. Broken Wings, I tell you, I wrote that book, first of all, to just show the world that God is truly a master healer. Because, like I said, my son died in my arms, and they revived him. And secondly, I want others to really understand that, like, when they go through tragedies and they experience tragic events, that it's not the end all. I want them to understand and see how prayer and how perseverance can really take you a long way when you are faced with the devastation that can come from a tragic event. So even though it's about brain injury, you know, through my son's recovery and our journey, it's really tailored to anyone who's gone through a traumatic event. And what I did was I used our life as the blueprint to show them how to take their fear and turn it into a tool that really that they can use to push them forward and to really just catapult them into their purpose. Because I was angry with God. You know, we went through that. As a minister, I was like, why did we go through this, you know? But now I know it's for such a time as this. And it was a part of what my purpose is. And so instead of finding a solution, I wanted to become the solution, if that makes sense. So by writing Broken Wings, what I did was I invited the world into our journey and to just show them that if we did it, then they can do it too. And through that, I just wanted to demonstrate the appreciation for the value of life. And when people read our book, I want to leave a message to them that don't be limited. Do not be limited, but evolve and be all that you can be in spite of any type of disability or in spite of the challenges that you're going to face when you go through a tragic event. And see, I talk to them and I let them understand that you got to heal emotionally when you go through those significant emotional events. And that's all a tragic event is. And when those negative emotions and those negative feelings attach themselves to the memory of that tragedy, that stuff can become debilitating and it can cripple you. And it can stop you from moving forward. And so that's what we do. We demonstrate to them that miracles is never really about what you lost, but the miracle is in what you have left. So I talk about my son and what he lost. He was an exceptional student in school. He was getting ready to start pre-college classes in the sixth grade at Fayetteville State University for their summer program. Now, guess what? He has a portion of his brain removed. They said he never walked, he never talked, and he's doing those things. He's functioning. So, see, the miracle is in what was left of the brain, not what he lost. And so that's what the book is about. It's about our journey as the survivor and the caregiver. And I just want the readers to know that they can go from tragedy to triumph. Mm-hmm. That is not the end. I talk about how faith, what faith meant to me. And faith, F-A-I-T-H, to me means forwarding all issues to him. I had to do that. I had to give everything to God because I was a nervous wreck. Think about it. I was a soldier in the United States Army, active duty. I was in a very abusive marriage at the time. Here my son is. I had a daughter that I had to send to go and live with my sister because I slept in the hospital on the floor. Mm-hmm. I had broken ribs myself that I didn't even know. And so those are the challenges. That's just the tip of the iceberg. And so what I just want to let people know that you can make it through a traumatic event. Soaring by the Power of God, I have that on the front of the book. And I listened to T.D. Jakes a lot, and he said that when you're going to soar, when you make up in your mind that you're going to soar, you have to break a law. And that law is the law of gravity. And so my son, even though he has broken wings, he's soaring by the power of God in spite of all the things that doctor said he'd never be able to do. And so it was really written for those with no resources but have dreams and visions to make it in spite of the challenges that they face, in spite of the tragedy that they've gone through. So I can talk about their book all day now, so I'll stop right there.
No, that's good. That's good. That's good stuff. That's good information.
So you're a public speaker as well, right?
Yes, sir.
So how did, that's a fear, and you being a minister, I'm sure, you do a good chunk of public speaking.
Yes, sir.
A lot of people struggle with that. How did you get over that?
Well,
that fear?
I've been singing, first of all, since I was 6 or 7 years old. And so, like you said, when you're a minister and you minister to people, you kind of just get in a comfort level. You develop a comfort level for it. But I still get butterflies. If you don't get butterflies, then something is wrong. But I think that, to me, public speaking really, I use it to help develop every area of my life. And because it can. When you think about it on a professional level, right, what it does is it helps me to be able to articulate the content of my message clearly. And the more you do it, the better you get at it, right? It helps you to become an effective communicator, because when you're talking about communication, that's critical to the survival of your business. You got to know how to talk to people. You got to know what to say, when to say it, and most importantly, you got to know how to say it. And I think the more you do it, it also builds overall confidence. You know, when you stand before people, well, first of all, when you're talking about something that you're passionate about, it's easy to do it because you never have to find anything to say, because you're talking from a place where you've gone. You're talking from a place where you've been. You're talking through experiences that you've gone through. And so it's easy to share those things. And like I said, the more you speak publicly, the better that you become at organizing and communicating the thoughts and the things that you really want to say.
Yes, you do. Mm-hmm. Yes, you do. Mm-hmm. So I want to ask this question.
Uh-huh.
When you decide to retire and hang it up, when you feel like you've done what you wanted to do, what you came here to do, and you have a chance to look back on your past and your accomplishments, what would you like to have been your greatest accomplishment, and why would that be?
Wow. I think if I can reach one brain injury survivor, or if I can reach just one caregiver, or just one person who's experienced any type of traumatic event, and just give them hope by showing them through my life that they can go from tragedy to triumph, then I think I've succeeded in my calling. And not only that, I think I fulfill my purpose. I believe that to be fruitful, you got to be seedful, right? And see, I like to look at myself as like the fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
See, I provide the nutrients that's needed to improve the growth. And I do that by simply supplementing the required elements that are found naturally. And what I mean by that is those elements that are found naturally are things that are found in a person's core values and their beliefs. And so when you go through a traumatic event, that interrupts that. That brings that growth to a halt. And so what I do is I come along and I nurture that by providing resources, by providing education, by providing motivation and inspiration. That's what I do. So if when I decide to when I can look back and say that those are my greatest accomplishments, that's it. I just want to know that I made a difference and that I made some caregiver's life easier. simply because of something that I said, or they read my book, or something that they witnessed me do, then I'll be okay.
Yes, ma'am. Nothing wrong with that. Yes, ma'am. So, it's now time for our world famous question, and we ask this question to every guest, and it makes Patrick feel real good. Ask this question, you know. He don't get out much, so when he asks this question, it's like going outside, going to the mall and stuff. So I'm gonna set Patrick up a little bit like this.
So, if you were the all-knowing, all-powerful ruler of Black America, what would you change, and what would your message to the people be?
Wow. Okay, so I would change the way people view change. I would make the slogan be, "The change I want to see must first begin in me." And the reason I say this is because the lessons that we go through and the lessons that we learn in life, they're not about us. It's all about our God-given purpose. And so encouraging everyone to celebrate what they know and not worry about the things that they don't know would be my focus. Just getting them to see that change must begin within before any change can occur, and that real change starts first from within ourselves. In order for things to change, we have to change first. And as far as the message to the people, I think about Jeremiah 29:11, and that says, "For I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." So my message would be, never measure your end by your beginning.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Now, that's... our people need that. Our people, that's that, because definitely I think sometimes we get caught up in the struggle that we go through, and we only concentrate on the bad. We only concentrate on the negative, and we keep getting that, and that keeps coming back to us over and over and over, because we keep giving life to it and giving energy to it instead of learning how to focus on that which we came here to do, and being able to rework our minds and allow the space for positivity to grow rather than negativity. So yes, ma'am, on that, I second that.
You know, that's good that you say that. You know, when you think about adversity and negative anyway, think about this. There's always something positive in a negative. When you think about a picture being developed, you know, back in the day, you used to have a dark room and all that, right?
Mm-hmm.
What they used to do, they used to take the negative, right?
Yep.
And from that negative, they developed something beautiful, which was the picture. So something beautiful came out of something negative. So there's always a positive in something negative.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So before we wrap this up, can you tell the people where they can purchase all of your books, your social media handles, websites, email, best ways to contact you, all of that information?
Yes, sir. Okay, my website is twylareid.com. That's twylireid.com. And I'm on Facebook at facebook.com/twyla.reid. Also, facebook.com/author twylareid. You can reach me on my Twitter is at brokenwingstbi. Also at TGReed02, and our Broken Wings Incorporated website is brokenwingsinc.org. That's brokenwingsinc.org. And also my email is brokenwings@twylareid.com. That's brokenwings@twylireid.com.
Yes, ma'am.
Again,
thank
in the books again. Like I said, it can be purchased on a website, twylareid.com.
Okay. All right. Y'all heard it here first. on the Freedom Train podcast series, Minister Twyla Reed. So when you see her on Oprah, remember where you seen her.
Yeah.
You say, I remember that from the Freedom Train. Yeah. I know. She was on, you know, we friends with Oprah and all that stuff.
Oh, wow. So I'm looking forward to passing the word along. I got the pleasure of meeting Mr. Omar Tyree this weekend. He said the same thing. We laughed about that.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so cool. But we definitely wish you, we thank you for your journey. We thank you for your strength. We thank you for being willing to tell your story. We thank you for being willing to give back to others and create opportunities and resources for others to be able to pick themselves up and grow. We thank you for creating those lanes because we need more assets and resources in our community, and what you've created can definitely help our community get better. And you're also a beacon of light for people who are going through traumatic situations and learning how to move forward and become stronger and grow through the tragedy. So thank you for what you do, and thank you for everything
that
you've created.
Well, thank you guys for having me. This has been awesome. I've enjoyed this interview. I tell you, I'm very passionate about this, so it's always great to talk with someone who shares that passion.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much. And we definitely look forward to talking to you soon in the future.
Yes, I look forward to that.
Yes, ma'am. Talk to you later.
All right. Good night, and God bless.
Thank you very much. God bless you as well.
Bye-bye.
Yes, yes. Minister Twyla Reed. Make sure you check out all of her social medias. Check out her website. Check out her books. All of that. Make sure you support. Pat.
What up?
We learned something today.
Mm-hmm.
Get your learn on. Everybody, get your learn on. What? So, hey, man.
That was a good conversation.
Yes, sir. Always down with learning something new. And she loved black people, too. So, you got to love that. Got to love people who love black people. So, hey. Any parting shots you want to take before we close this one out, my brother?
No, you know, power to the people. I ain't got the energy I would normally have. But
well, I'm going to do it for you. Remember, like I told y'all, we have new podcasts coming on the Freedom Train Network. Every Monday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, make sure you log on to the Freedom Train. Log on to freedomtrainradio.com. Click on the tab that says Office Hours so you can watch the live show of Professor Carl Tone Jones with Erica Tolbert, and that show is called Office Hours. So make sure you catch that. Of course, you know we have The Fix, the realest and the blackest sports podcast you've ever heard. Our title show, the Freedom Train podcast series. Patrick is coming with his new show, Lessons from the Screen. We have Tea Time, Black Women Talk. That show is going to be starting soon. Our other co-host, Jay, he's starting another show soon. We have a hip-hop show that's going to be starting soon. We have articles and things that's going to be coming out. This network is growing, so you all stay tuned because the content is going to be busting you in the face like one of them rainy days and you forgot your umbrella and the rain is busting you in your face. That's how we're going to be doing it. So y'all sit back and get ready for this because this is growing and this movement is coming. Like Beanie Sigel said in State Property, put your 3D glasses on because we're coming straight at you. You know what I'm saying? So, with that being said, I'm Joseph Ward. He's Patrick Irvin. And we cool as hell. This is the Freedom Train podcast series. And, you know, if y'all don't know, like I know, we'll see y'all later. Two fingers up like a flare. Peace out.